You're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona. Welcome to the program, A Good Book. This is part 9 of the book, Late for the Bus, An Adoption Story, Finding My Birth Parents, Jerry and Joanne Buss. I'm your volunteer reader, Lee Close, and I am also the author of the book. This is the true story of finding my birth parents after years of fruitless searching, only to discover that I am the eldest daughter of Dr. Gerald Buss, the multimillionaire, legendary owner of the Los Angeles Lakers, and his wife, Joanne. In the previous broadcast, there was a job switch from Avery back to Rubbermaid, and then the first million-dollar order of a single product, the box office. Also travels with mom to Hawaii and the family to Scotland to play golf. It also brought the loss of my adoptive father, Jimmy, and a year later, the beginning of wondering about my birth father, Jerry, who, unbeknownst to me at the time, was winning his 4th and 5th Lakers championship. A trip to Sacramento to sign papers to receive my non-identifying information, and also meeting Dr. Hammerschlag to help me with the anger I experienced when finding out that my birth parents were married, educated, and had still chosen to give me away. It ends with my introduction to the Native-led Sweat Lodge. We now continue with the reading. Chapter 9, Independence Day. If you don't like the road you're walking, start paving another one. Dolly Parton. During my career at Keith Clark, now renamed At a Glance, I continued my education, and in 1997, I received a Master of Arts degree in Human Resources from Ottawa University. My major included an emphasis in organizational change management. During my studies, I attended a seminar on conflict analysis and resolution at George Mason University in Virginia in order to complete my thesis about an obscure style of negotiation known as single text negotiation, used by President Carter at the Camp David Accords in 1978. My intention in receiving this degree was to shift from sales into human resources, but major corporations were beginning to downsize. More firing, less hiring. I stayed in sales, and it proved to be the right decision. At a Glance incorporated several acquisitions into our division. Calendar companies, gift companies. It was challenging and fun. We acquired Daydream Calendars, which owned the Sports Illustrated license for the famous swimsuit calendar. Not long after the acquisition, I was working a trade show in New York with pictorial wall calendars prominently displayed in the booth. They were known as 16-month calendars because, in addition to the standard 12 months, the product also included the last 4 months of the previous year for reference on the front inside page. During the show, a man walked into the booth and picked up the swimsuit edition calendar, obviously entranced by the young woman in the photograph, but he was unable to see the format inside because the product was shrink-wrapped. He looked up at me and asked, 16 months? When did the year go to 16 months? After that, I started wearing a small round patch at trade shows that simply stated, to some questions, there are no answers. Capturing moments like this made staying in sales worthwhile. I worked with At a Glance for a full decade from 1988 to 1998, the longest stay for me in any company. But I still had this deep-seated knack or fault, depending on your perspective, of jumping ship without any substantial evidence of impending doom. So yes, I jumped. My next stop was a position as Western Regional Manager with Pentec, a New York-based company that specialized in licensed writing instruments. The executive staff was small, and we all did double duty. Our product manager, equipped with an engineering degree and a few patents on writing instruments, developed the product specifications and designed and drew the artwork for the licensed pens. She also designed the retail product displays, as well as the trade show booth we used in New York. During my stint at Pentek, we were selling promotional merchandise for a Star Wars prequel, The Phantom Menace. It was exciting to be part of the buzz, including a visit to George Lucas's Skywalker Ranch in California. The film was released in May 1999, much to the delight of fans, but the merchandise sales were slow, especially any product featuring the character Jar Jar Binks. I'm just guessing, but these products are probably now considered collectibles. Fortunately, the company also had evergreen licensed products like Mickey Mouse and Winnie the Pooh, which softened the blow. Although it was my highest base salary to date, it just wasn't my thing, so I didn't stay long. I received a call to return to At a Glance. Once again, as they say, you can never go home. Once again, I paid no attention to that maxim. In the summer of 1999, I returned to At a Glance with the best of intentions. I continued my education and received a Master's of Education degree with an emphasis in human relations from Northern Arizona University, and thought again about a career move within At a Glance. Unfortunately, about that time, the Mead Corporation purchased the company and the corporate culture changed overnight. Our small, tight-knit management group could only watch as our cozy little booth at the New York Trade Show suddenly expanded to accommodate all the new flat goods, theme books, binders, etc. We were assigned lockers with our names printed on Dymo labels. Everyone was expected to be in lockstep, everything shipshape. This was not my kind of career. Too big, too conservative, too much. Less than a year later, I took a short stint as a regional manager with Pentab, a small paper company out of Virginia. In addition to a large portion of the United States, my region included Western Canada. Selling paper is not like selling staples or labels or pens. Paper is a commodity-type product in a competitive and difficult market. I began to tire of being on the road constantly and pressed my manager, the vice president of sales, for an assistant to help with forecasting, a process absolutely critical in the paper goods market. After a long business trip while waiting for our respective flights at Auntie Anne's pretzel shop in the Pittsburgh airport, I asked him again for an assistant. He was not pleased at my persistence and abruptly closed the conversation. "My flight is being announced. I've got to go. But I can tell you this, the headcount is not going to go up." He got up and walked away. I waited until he was out of earshot, stood up from the table, and said in a voice loud enough for those sitting nearby to hear, "Well, I can tell you this, the headcount is about to go down by one." I could hear the whispering all around me. That was the end of working for someone else. The next day, which happened to be Good Friday, I resigned via cyberspace. This angered my boss, who was completely unaware of my decision until informed by human resources on Easter Monday. We never spoke again. I don't ever recommend resigning that way. That weekend felt like a free fall. I wrote in my journal, "I am always jumping ship at the first sign of trouble, and it usually turns out the water is cold and the result more treacherous than if I had stayed aboard." And now even I could see a pattern emerging. Shorter stays, more frustration, and for the first time, I left a job without having another one lined up. I cried all weekend and journaled that suddenly I felt like a motionless hummingbird. From my earliest days in sales, there was always the persistence and the motivation to be successful. And now, with no job lined up, I was concerned but not regretful about my decision. I called my friend Anne, who read a quote to me for Andre Gide that launched many afternoon tea discussions together. "One does not discover new lands without consenting to lose sight of the shore." The airport drama and subsequent resignation on Good Friday was the kick in the rear that I needed to start my own company. And I did exactly that, with an official start date of May 1st, 2000. I knew I was giving up the generous compensation, company car, expense account, and 401k, but there would be the freedom to be the captain of my own ship. My self-reliance as an adult had grown from many childhood experiences and from my parents' philosophy. You got yourself into this mess, now you'll have to get yourself out of it. In the year 2000, while I was starting my own company, my biological father, Dr. Jerry Buss, would win his 6th Lakers championship, his 7th in 2001, and his 8th in 2002. With $5,000 in savings and a substantial corporate resume, I started my own manufacturer's rep firm. I traveled to major trade shows in New York, Miami, Dallas, San Francisco, and Los Angeles, and picked up several lines as an independent representative for small giftware companies. Over the next couple of years, I learned the pitfalls of being an independent rep, selling unique gift items from small companies to large national retailers like Walgreens and Costco. Orders were huge, but commission checks were often late or non-existent. Because my career had always been that of corporate employee, I was unaware of the one big caveat of venturing out on my own. Manufacturers' representatives are unsecured creditors. I was cheated out of a fair amount of commissions and decided instead to work as a consultant for startups in the gift industry on a contractual basis. This was much better. In 2002, I traveled to Frankfurt, Germany to visit Paperworld, an international trade show for stationery, office supplies, and writing instruments. I wrote articles for back-to-school trends for 2 industry magazines. But as time went on, the travel costs and business expenses took a big chunk of my consulting income. I was working twice as hard for half the income. So here I was, once again, looking to reevaluate and realign my career. Fortunately, 2002 was also the year Dr. Hammerschlag invited me to participate in a weekend sweat lodge retreat, part of the Turtle Island project he had founded in 1986. I needed a refresh and a recharge, and it was also a chance to see many of the participants I had met earlier in the sweat lodge. It was good to see Dr. H again and have the time to talk informally at the retreat. I told him I was feeling disjointed about my life and career. He had often told me over the years that I did everything the hard way and reminded me, try not to take yourself so seriously. See the joy in change. And then Dr. H imparted words so vivid, they impact me even today. And make sure you continue to splash in the cosmos. I completed my consulting projects and changed my focus towards being an independent manufacturer's rep in the commercial office supply industry, representing larger, more stable, well-known companies that would pay commissions fully and on time. In no time through networking, I secured representation for several major office supply lines, Swingline, GBC, Quartet, Kensington, Chartpak, and Yasutomo, as well as several brands as a sub-rep, including Pilot Pen. I rebalanced my life. There were no tedious plane flights, just in Arizona territory. I've celebrated being an independent rep for over 22 years now, still happy with the decision that allowed me the flexibility and the freedom I treasure. With more leisure time, I begin painting with watercolors and enjoying the beauty of my surroundings. You're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm your volunteer reader, Lee Close, and we're reading the book, Late for the Bus, An Adoption Story. We continue on with the story. I also had the time to volunteer for 7 years as a radio reader at Sun Sounds of Arizona, a radio reading show for the blind. It was something I always wanted to do, inspired by a talented blind music teacher I had in grade school. After a successful audition, I was assigned a show called Wildlife. I recorded my readings from various wildlife magazines for a weekly half-hour radio show. There were some days I wondered if anyone was listening, so I asked the station manager, "Who listens to this show anyway?" "Well, I'm not sure exactly how many listeners we have for this show, but I can tell you about a 9-year-old girl, blind from birth, who has listened to the wildlife show for years. She loves stories about spiders and snakes." After that humbling experience, I began to focus on reading to one person out there, and it made all the difference. About a year later, I was leaving the building after a recording session and noticed the shift manager, who was visibly upset after speaking to someone on the phone. I couldn't help but ask, "What's wrong? You look upset." "Yes, I am definitely upset. One of our readers just resigned due to an upcoming surgery, and it's doubtful he will come back." "Oh, I'm sorry. What show is it?" "You wouldn't be interested. It's called In Tune with Music, and it's all classical and opera. It's an hour show, and you have to supply your own music to supplement the readings." I could not contain myself. "That's my favorite kind of music. I have a closet full of opera and classical CDs." I got the show. I introduced a friend of mine to Sun Sounds, who successfully auditioned for the wildlife show, and I started my music show. It was another example of a life-changing moment, falling into something you've only dreamed of doing. Recording the reading of music magazines out loud, cover to cover, and mixing my own music taught me more about concert music and opera than I could have ever learned otherwise. My music memory contest as a young girl had left an imprint. For a short time, I also had a live radio show in Studio A, and in 2003, I interviewed Dmitry Drobichevsky, the former music critic for the Arizona Republic newspaper and author of the memoir, My Father's Son. Dmitry's father, a noted violinist in Berlin, was deported to Auschwitz, and Dmitry spent 5 years in the French Foreign Legion during World War II. This was my first live interview and possibly my most important. I also interviewed John Metz, professor of harpsichord and director of early music at Arizona State University and the founder of the Phoenix Early Music Society. Another memorable interview was with my friend Ginger Hutton, author of the book From the Heart and the former columnist for the Arizona Republic, who spoke about her early days as a reporter covering the Arizona legislature. Saying goodbye to Uncle George and Mom. After Aunt Faye passed away in 1985 and Dad in 1989, Uncle George moved to Arizona in 1992 to be with Mom. They had known each other since 1928. She wasted no time in taking him to her Baptist church, and he was baptized within a year. Born on February 21, 1912, George passed away on February 19, 1998, at the age of 85. They had a few sweet years together. Mom lived in a retirement apartment at the Baptist Village for the last 5 years of her life. I became her financial caretaker. Her Social Security was $756 a month, and the apartment was $905 per month. When you lose a spouse or partner late in life, your monthly income drops by at least 50%, literally overnight. It can be frightful for anyone, but especially for the elderly on a limited income. I didn't want her to worry. Mom died at the age of 90 on April 19, 2005, 20 years to the day after the death of her sister, Faye. The last time Mom and I were out together, she was getting ready to go to a dance at her retirement home. She was no longer steady enough to dance, but she would tap the rhythm on the floor while seated, listening to the music. I was taking her shopping for some new clothes. As we drove by a Circle K convenience store, she said, "Stop! I'd like a candy bar." I made a quick turn, pulled in, and bought a dark chocolate Milky Way for her. She took one bite and said, "Here, you eat the rest of it." Early the next morning, I flew to Chicago for a meeting, and that evening received a phone call from a hospital. Your mother has breakthrough bleeding of the brain, and it is best that you come here immediately. The next day, as I was flying home, she was being transferred to a hospice facility. When I arrived, it was a shock for me to see my mother was basically paralyzed on one side, sitting in a wheelchair in the dining room. I tried to feed her a bite of food, but she refused. In fact, she refused all food and drink. My sister Christine and her son Jamie flew in from Virginia. Mom had visitors from her Baptist church who read scripture to her, and her grandson Jamie played the guitar and sang to her. During my time alone with her, I wasn't sure what to do to help. I picked up a Bible that was near her bed. "Do you want me to read some scripture to you, Mom?" She gently shook her head no. I guess I was never much of a Baptist. It hurt my feelings, but when I held her hand, she would rub my hand gently to let me know she was ready to go. 16 days later, she passed. When the mortuary called me to come in to verify, I was unable to view her lifeless body. I just could not bring myself to do it. "Is there some identifiable mark that you can describe to us so we can verify?" "Yes. She has a long scar from her belly button to her pubic bone from abdominal surgery." I planned 2 memorial services, one at her beloved Baptist church and one at the retirement home for those who could not attend the church service. In 2004, the year prior to Mom's death, I had interviewed her on tape at Thanksgiving. I played a portion of that tape at the end of the memorial service at the retirement home. I thought it would be a good idea, but hearing her voice coming from the back of the room startled many of her friends. In retrospect, I should have announced what was coming first. Her words on tape as I played them that day: "Give a part of yourself to everyone because, in time, it will come back to you. Never hesitate to speak to someone where they look lonely, or even reach out and touch them to say, 'I love you.' There is love all around if you look for it." Before Christine returned to Virginia, she and I went to the Baptist Village retirement home to clear out Mom's apartment. We found several $5, $10, and $20 bills stuffed in her reclining chair and pulled them out one by one. I looked at my sister and said, "Tip money?" We both laughed and it broke the sadness. With the apartment cleaned out, the last thing I did was check under her bed. I found her tap shoes and the piece of plywood she practiced her dance steps on while sitting on the bed. That night, I journaled that my mom was a real spark plug to a room full of engines. A few weeks later, my sister and I received the $1,000 life insurance policy Mom had purchased in 1940. We gave the money to Jamie to repay him for the $1,000 he had given to her several years earlier to help with car repairs. We knew she would have wanted us to do that. I believe somewhere out there, Mom and Dad are dancing together once again. This brings us to the end of part one, and fortunately also just about to the end of the show as well. Part two will begin with the end of my 30-year marriage, finding Ancestry.com, or I should say joining Ancestry.com, and finding my birth family, finally. So for this next 2 minutes, I'd like to read a couple of quotes, Positive Quotes for Every Day by Patricia Lorenz. And the first one is, "A Walk on the Wild Side." If we listened to our intellect, we'd never have a love affair. We'd never have a friendship. We'd never go into business because we'd be too cynical. Well, that's nonsense. You've got to jump off cliffs all the time and build your wings on the way down. Annie Dillard. We wear seatbelts, sunscreen, and helmets. We exercise and try to eat right. But sometimes we need to be spontaneous and silly. We need to blow kazoos, dance with our inner rubber chicken, and strut like turkeys. Life is short. Make time to enjoy it. And one more positive quote. We didn't lose the game. We just ran out of time. Vince Lombardi. When Vince Lombardi was the Green Bay Packers coach, he amassed a stunning 98-30-4 record and collected 6 division titles, 5 NFL championships, and 2 Super Bowl victories. Lombardi drilled his players and constantly worked to come up with new strategies. His teams were successful because Lombardi's positive attitude radiated to his players. They were relentless, and nothing discouraged them. That concludes today's broadcast. Join us on the next program for the continuation of Late for the Bus, an adoption story by Lee Close, author of the book and your volunteer reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. Thank you so much.